This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Dave Anthony. Today, a guy who's not afraid to get his hands dirty. In fact, Mike Rowe has made a career of it. You've probably watched his Dirty Jobs TV show. He also has one on Fox Business, How America Works. It's in season 3. We talked about that the other day, along with a lot of other things, including a topic Mike Rowe has focused on for years. You don't need a college degree to be successful. This amid the controversy over President Biden's program to give millions of Americans the chance to wipe out up to $20,000 in student loan debt. Now, our discussion went on far too long to fit it all in the Rundown podcast, so today we will let you hear all of it. Thank you for listening. As always, subscribe if you haven't already. And now Mike Rowe on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Joining us again on the Fox News Rundown is Mike Rowe. You can see him on Fox Business Monday nights with his program, How America Works. And then you can also watch it on Fox Nation. You can stream all the episodes from the prior seasons and the current one after it airs. Mike, thanks very much for joining us.
Nice, Dave. Happy to be here.
I wanted to get your thoughts. We'll get to the show. Obviously, you're in a new season, and you know the firefighting is obviously, it looks really cool. I've already seen some of the stuff that you promoted. I wanted to get your thoughts on where we are. The student loan forgiveness program has been simmering for a few months out there. President Biden opened it up for people to apply last week. Federal judge put a hold on it over the weekend. Appeals court put a hold on it over the weekend. But the president says, hey, still apply. What are your thoughts on this program?
Well, politically, I think I understand what's going on. Practically, something else might be going on. Legally, that's a bit beyond my purview. You know what I mean? How it shakes out in the courts.
Right.
Who knows? But look, I've always been in a strange spot with this, because my foundation makes a big, noisy, and I hope persuasive case for jobs that don't require a four-year degree.
Right.
It's not because I'm opposed to four-year degrees. It's just that right now the 11 million open positions we have in the country, by and large, don't require one. They require training.
Right.
And so for me, as a knee-jerk reaction, whenever I hear a push to forgive, which incidentally is a curious choice of words.
Right.
I mean, sure, I'll forgive you for borrowing $100,000, but don't ask me to forget about it or pay for it, right? So I always feel like, look, the diploma is a tool. It can be a very valuable tool. It's certainly a very expensive tool, but it's not a more critical tool than a diesel truck that a contractor relies upon to build your house. It's not a more important tool than a bulldozer that a contractor might purchase in order to do his job, and so forth and so on. So personally, I always felt like we're picking winners and losers when we decide what kind of investment in our future to forgive and forget. Why this and not that?
Let's talk about the contractor, the person who drives that truck, the person who operates the bulldozer. They didn't get $20,000 in a federal student loan to get that job. Do you think they feel like, hey, that's not fair?
Well, I'm hesitant to speak too loudly for anybody but me, but I'll tell you anecdotally, I've talked to hundreds of people who I met on Dirty Jobs, lots of people on How America Works. These are men and women who, yeah, who have expressed to me a fundamental sense that they're less valued, that their skill is less valued, that their work is less valued. And they're used to it, to be honest. There are thousands of ways that our society has passed all sorts of various judgments on various forms of education and various ways to earn a buck. And by and large, yeah, they feel like they are not at the top.
Generations ago, a lot of Americans did those jobs, or unskilled jobs, whatever you want to call them. And then there was a lot of pride when their child became the first in the family to go to college. Mm-hmm. So college became this wonderful thing, right? I mean, you had an opportunity to use your mind to make a living as opposed to, you know, breaking your back and coming home every night.
Sure.
So what happened? I mean, it was romanticized.
Well, it is a wonderful thing. And, you know, I get pushback a lot from people who say, well, you know, Mike, he's okay. He's got his foundation, but he's anti-education. Of course not. I'm a product of a liberal arts degree. It served me well. And in 1984, when the dust settled and I finished my community college and my university experience, the whole thing cost me $12,000. Today, the exact
same
experience.
That's like one class.
The exact same experience, Dave. The exact same course load would be about $92,000.
Yeah.
So nothing in the history of this society that's valuable has increased in cost faster. Not energy, not healthcare, not food, not real estate. Nothing has become more expensive than the cost of a four-year degree. So that's the first thing to understand. Is it valuable? Sure. Is it worth it at any cost? Well, of course not. And it really depends. We paint with a very, very broad brush. So to answer your question, what happened is we told an entire generation of kids that they'd be screwed if they didn't go to college. At the same time, we removed shop class from high schools, thereby proving optically there's truly nothing to see here. There is no, don't even waste your time thinking about a skilled trade.
Yeah. When I was in high school in the 80s, it was college fairs. It was the guidance counselor. It was everybody putting, you know, take the SATs, and if you didn't do well, take them again.
Yeah.
Keep taking them.
See, I personally do believe higher ed needed better PR. We needed a campaign in the 70s and 80s to encourage more people to explore that road, but we didn't stop at simply making a case for college. We had to do it by saying, and if you don't go, you're going to get stuck turning a wrench, or you're going to get stuck in some other dead-end job. Well, guess what? Those dead-end jobs, currently defined as, say, welding or plumbing and so forth, I can tell you from experience, they're six-figure jobs. And the men and women I know who are doing them, by and large, are happy, engaged, and well-balanced.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So let's take the welder.
Mm-hmm.
How does someone go from high school to being a welder making six figures, and how long would it take?
Depends on the person, of course. I mean, honestly, it's a bit like saying, how long is it going to take a financial advisor to make $1 million?
That's fair.
And that's why what you – look, I don't draw much of a line between a skilled worker and a college-educated worker, but I do draw a bright line between an unskilled worker and a skilled worker.
Mm-hmm.
So if you learn a skill that's in demand, like welding, and if you are good at it or willing to work to become good at it, and if you're also willing, and this is important, no one wants to talk about it anymore, but if you're willing to go to where the work is, if you're willing to travel,
right,
and continue to improve. There are lots of different types of welding. So I know people who started with a $6,000 welding certificate and were making $42,000 a year. 3 years later, they're making $200,000.
Wow.
Some are welding underwater, making much more than that. Others are working for like Joe Gibbs Racing. Others work in nuclear power plants. The opportunities to simply stay in the welding lane and prosper are real. But the even bigger opportunity is the welder who picks up a plumbing certificate as well, and then hires some buddies to do HVAC and electrical. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, they got three vans and a dozen employees, and that's a going concern.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about that is that one of the things that has happened over the last, you know, many years, people who work in corporate America, they get laid off or they leave or whatever, they're always dying to own their own business. They don't want to answer to anybody anymore. You just talked about people essentially owning their own business. It's not necessarily, though, doing what people think in their mind they're going to do.
No, it's really interesting when you imagine in your mind's eye the small business owner, it almost always redounds to some kind of brick and mortar location where you wait for people to come to you. And so you can facilitate some kind of transaction. Mm-hmm. Most small businesses begin and revolve around a skilled trade. Most of them are mobile. Most of them are vans. Most of them are people going out into the world to fix a thing that's busted.
Yeah.
Right. And it's easy to sort of arbitrage all that out of the conversation and just reduce a skilled trade to a job. In many, many, many cases, those trades are on-ramps into businesses.
You talk about unskilled. So unskilled, we're talking, there's a lot of unskilled jobs out there, but they're like, you know, services businesses or retail or things like that.
Sure.
But you're not going to make six figures doing those jobs.
No, you're not. But if you look at that job as an isolated rung on a ladder that you're never going to ascend from, then yeah, then now you're a click away from drudgery and a life of quiet desperation. But what's the point in getting on a ladder that you don't climb? Mm-hmm. Those unskilled jobs are the lower rungs on the ladder, but they're arguably the most critical rungs. Because if I ask you right now to remember your first jobs, you're not going to tell me about the skill you had mastered, right?
It was retail. I was 15, of course.
That's right.
But I look very fondly upon all that. I made friends and we had an awesome time.
Of course. And you know what? The older you get, the larger they're going to loom, right? People understand every person I know who has enjoyed some level of success now looks back at those early jobs that they used to curse and they say, actually, you know what? That's where I learned the importance of this or that. It's not just the skill either. It's the soft skill. Show up on time, right? An attitude, delayed gratification, personal responsibility, consequences, right? Yeah, tuck your shirt in. It's important to me because it's all part of the same quilt. And if we try and elevate certain jobs or certain forms of education at the expense of the other ones, then the workforce is truly going to fall out of balance. And that's what I think we've done. We've literally made work into some sort of enemy, and we've assigned a value proposition to a great many vocations, and it's self-defeating.
But then somebody might say, I don't want to be a plumber. What's that? That's that. Sure. I've seen the guy come over, what he has to do. I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Then welcome to the United States of America, where nobody can make you. All right. So you're going to be fine. Go ahead and enjoy your life as a non-plumber. But do me a favor. When you need one and you call and no one shows up for a day or two,
yeah,
or three.
They're busy.
They're busy and they're prospering. And you, meanwhile, are sitting there next to your defiled toilet that's not operating as advertised, shaking your fist at the heavens and wondering why you don't possess the skill to fix it yourself. So look, this is the thing. Our skilled workforce is not in a bubble. Our skilled workforce is the thing that allows us to live the lives we want to live, because they're tending to the infrastructure we need. They're keeping us on the grid. And imagine lockdowns without the fiber optics that allowed the whole Zoom enterprise to exist. Imagine lockdowns without the van drivers, you know, who brought all the stuff to us. That's all a part of it, too. So, you know, it doesn't make much sense to demean, disparage, or otherwise look down upon these jobs when we rely upon them so obviously.
When you are talking to people who want one of these, What's the barrier? Because, I mean, they have to learn that somewhere, right? So it's not, if they don't go to college, well, where are they going to get this?
Well, the barrier to the best jobs that are going begging right now come in the form of stigmas, stereotypes, myths, and misperceptions.
Okay.
Most people simply are not up to speed with the fact that you can make six figures in heating and air conditioning easily.
No.
They're just not up to speed with it.
No.
Now, you don't sign on the dotted line and start making six figures. It's going to take you a year, 18 months to get into it. But so my work at MicroWorks, the reason I have the foundation I have, first and foremost, is to disabuse people of those misconceptions. And look, I hate to say it, but they're fostered from a lot of different directions. Parents want something, quote unquote, better for their kids.
Yeah.
They just don't know what better means necessarily. Yeah. Guidance counselors are oftentimes bonused on their ability to transition a kid into a four-year school, not a trade school. Madison Avenue does a really good job at reinforcing all sorts of stereotypes. Mm-hmm. I say plumber, you picture a dude, 300 pounds, butt crack hanging out the whole routine.
Right, and someone who he was one of the dumb kids in high school.
That's
right.
Right. That's right.
That's all, and that's the other thing too. People might come home and say, "Mom and Dad, I would like to do this," but you're too smart for that.
That's right. That's right. All of that stuff, it's artifacts from an old way of thinking, and it's simply not germane today. 11 million open positions today. 7 million men in the prime of their working lives, 25 to 54, not only not working, but affirmatively sitting out of the workforce.
What are they doing?
According to Nick Eberstadt, who wrote a great book on the subject, 95% of them are spending over 2,000 hours a year on screens. They're playing Call of Duty. They're going down some social media rabbit hole. They're embracing their inner avatar.
But who pays for their rent? I just don't understand.
Well, I hate to say it, but not them. So either society or their parents or some kind of disability check. And by the way, that's another thing. It's happening. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush. And there are obviously people who are truly disabled in this country.
Sure.
But the overwhelming majority of disability claims, back injuries and mental anguish, the two categories that are virtually impossible to prove. And so, look, if you start connecting the dots, then you're going to be left with a question. And the question is, what does the existence of 11 million open jobs say about the country? What does it mean? And my buddies on the left will say, well, it means that employers aren't paying enough money, and if they did, those jobs would fill. And my buddies on the right say, well, it means people are fundamentally lazy, and what are you going to do? And so there may be some truth in both. I don't know for sure. That's just why, for me, I always come back to the place that says, if you're willing to learn a skill that's in demand, I'll pay for it. Not a skill that isn't in demand, and not a four-year degree.
Is it better to try to find a plumber or somebody to be an apprentice? Is it better to go to a trade school, or are those both good ways to do it?
I think they're both good ways. I don't think there's a straight path for anyone. And this is another trap, Dave. It's we as parents want a playbook. They want to know, do this, then do this, then do this. Mm-hmm. And congratulations, you will have not screwed your kid up. But that's just not how it works. You know, it's a long, crooked road, and you're going to work most of your life. So you might as well find something that you're good at, something that engages you, and something that, you know, allows you the opportunity to live something that looks like a balanced life. The trades do that in ways that many others don't.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Let's get to your show, How America Works. Season 3 underway. on Fox Business, 8 p.m. Mondays, also streaming on Fox Nation. The newest episode deals with firefighters, right? And we're talking about not just the guys who come show up at your house,
Wildland firefighters, No, it's, I mean, obviously it's headline news. You know, I live in Northern California. We feature the guys over at Grayback Forestry tonight. And you just get a look at what it takes to go headlong into a full-on forest fire.
I can't even imagine.
And you know what? To be honest, we can't even show you. We try. Our cameras get right in the middle of it. But until you're standing on the front line of a thing like that, until you hear the sound.
Yeah, what is the sound like?
It sounds like a locomotive.
They say that about tornadoes.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. That's true. Isn't it funny? Because because when the wind howls as the fire's blowing, that's when it just... It's unspeakable, you know, and the bravery that is required. And
they don't know. They can't predict. The wind's going to go this way or that way, they think. But if the wind goes the way they didn't want it to, boy, that's a bad time.
I did a show a couple years ago in Arizona.
Oh, yeah, those
17.
That was
the
awful.
The hot shots died.
Yeah, that was awful.
Died in their fire bags.
Yeah.
You know? And
do they helicopter in?
Sometimes, yeah.
To oftentimes. The middle of the fire?
Yeah. Yeah, you literally, I mean, it's not unlike going into a hot zone in a battle. You're literally landing in the middle of it, and you basically fight your way out. So, yeah, I mean, typically what we do on this series, it's like Dirty Jobs, except it's not hosted. I present it and I narrate it, but I really wanted the viewer to have a better perspective of a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
And just simply look at the inside of industries that really don't get a lot of attention. Firefighting is actually a bad example because so many movies and TV shows have been made.
No, it's
about
very
it.
Much so, yeah.
But we'll look at the glass industry.
But not wildfires
not
so much.
Wildfires.
No.
Not wildfires. True. No, it's true. And it's you can't get too much of it. Our first show last season was cops. Because there's just never been a harder time to be a cop. Our first show this season was cargo, because all of a sudden supply chain.
Oh yeah, we all care about that. Yeah,
we care. So you know, I'm trying to give people a look at an essential industry that's really out of sight, out of mind, right? It just doesn't have a lot of glamour attached
and
to it.
And you're focusing like I looked at like you know other episodes. It was like corn, mm-hmm. beef. Aluminum. Like you're talking industries and big picture stuff. Dirty Jobs necessarily might be some job like, oh my God, how could anyone do this? You know,
That's very different. Dirty Jobs was actually, and still is, by the way, we're still at it. That's really it's a talk show in a sewer. You know, Dirty Jobs was really about biography, really, you know, trying to get to know the person who's doing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a component to this, but I wanted to step back a little further and say, look, you got to try to imagine a world without copper just for a minute. And here's what that world would look like.
No pennies.
Well,
well
right
they're probably
now,
not even made of copper
they're
anyway.
Not.
Exactly.
They're made in 1982. They stopped making them out of copper and started making them out of zinc.
They just look like they're copper.
But we're dead without copper. As a mineral, our bodies need it. Can't function without it. And yet there's copper, you know, down below nickel, down below silver, down below gold, should be above all of them. Right. So it's fun in some ways because I'm able to anthropomorphize all sorts of metals and, and topics. But it's all with me. It's always the same thing. You tap the country on the shoulder and you say, look, you got to try to imagine your life without this, without that, without him, without her.
You ever thought about doing an episode where you actually take the viewer into a cubicle farm and show people what the monotonous life of someone in data entry or whatever job that, you know.
Well, the truth is, I didn't have to because when Dirty Jobs started, that's right. The country was living it. The country had evolved in its work ethos into this place where the default position was the kind of day-to-day you describe. That's why Office Space was such a huge hit.
Yeah.
Right? Because it, like, everybody understood. My God.
The printer. All the stuff in the...
All of it.
I Have Eight Bosses. All that stuff. Yeah.
Yep. That was one of the first movies to both acknowledge and lampoon it at the mm-hmm. same time. And Dirty Jobs came out before that. But, you know, it was ripe. No one was looking... respectfully and with humor at this whole category of of work. And so for me, it was just a great opportunity to reconnect people to the kinds of jobs that make civilized life possible. I didn't have to tell them that working in a cubicle would be a drag at all. All I had to do was show them happy people doing hard work that seemed to have figured something out that the cubicle farmers had forgotten. And that resonated.
In the end, Peter's happiest. What's he doing working at a construction site, right?
That's right. And smashing that copier to pieces.
Exactly, exactly. Again, the program is How America Works with Mike Rowe, episode 3. Season 3 is underway on Fox Business, also at Fox Nation. And the Mike Rowe Works Foundation, give us the website, please.
MikeRoweWorks.org. We are always awarding work ethic scholarships, raising money, and trying to make a more persuasive case for the jobs that we all rely upon.
Mike Rowe, thanks so much for joining us.
Anytime.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.